Hey, stupid nerds. Download the Boogie Monster with Kyle Kinane and Dave Stone. So you can find out what happened to Frankenstein and the Wolfman and all that fictional stuff that never happened. And don't pay attention to World War II or the American flag or important things.
The Boogie Monster. Podcasting the unknown.
I'm Dave Stone. Let's get Kyle Kinane up here. Thanks for coming out.
Thank yeah. Oh man, talking about a lot about death and the dead. Welcome to Live Boogie Monster podcast from Savage Henry Comedy Club in Eureka. Thanks for being here, everybody.
Yeah.
It's an early Saturday.
And thanks to Savage Henry for hosting this.
Yeah.
The Savage Henry Comedy Club. Like I said, I'm Dave Stone. That's Kyle Kinane.
That's me, Kyle.
The Boogie Monster Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
That is us.
We just said that like five times.
Yeah. I like to be thorough.
Yeah, we came up to this is a special episode. First off, we've been up here for a few days. We decided to go camping out in what was it, Elk Prairie?
Prairie Creek Redwood State Park, and then more specifically the Elk Prairie Campgrounds. And thought we'd go up there for a couple of days and what we call squatching, really just us tramping around in the mud.
Which, and we have special guests, and I do want to find out the difference between squatching and just camping. Because we went on a hike, Dave. What happened? We went on a hike, unprepared.
Well,
I bought an Apple Watch. I thought there's no way we're gonna get lost. I just got an Apple Watch. So let's ignore all the signage and just go into the woods because I've got an Apple Watch. We should be fine.
Well, we definitely wanted to get a hike in because, you know, fitness is such a priority for me. It's like, let's get our steps in. Even though we're squatching, Kyle, we can't lax on our fitness. Kyle wanted to walk to the ocean, to, I guess, it's Gold Bluffs Beach. And he told me it's 4 miles each way. So that's 4 miles there, 4 miles back. And I'm like, 8 miles for me, that's ambitious but doable. And I was like, all right, let's do that. So we started off, and we walked about a mile and a half. And then we saw a sign that said Gold Bluffs Beach, 4 miles. And I started doing that math, and I was like, well, hold on. That's going to be about 11 miles round trip. So I kind of put the kibosh on that. And then you had an alternate route.
Well, at least you were smart enough to take a picture of a map at the trailhead that was clearly some panhandler had drawn up in the late 1800s, because this was not indicative of the current terrain.
And
I think there was like here be monsters on parts of that map that we were using.
So a mile and a half in, I put the kibosh on the whole walk to the ocean thing. I like the ocean. I've seen the ocean, but I don't need to walk 11 miles to see it again. So Kyle's like, well, I found this other route that'll take us down through
the
some
ocean.
Valley.
I've seen the ocean.
Big deal. But he's like, all right, this other route will take us kind of a loop, and it'll be about 3 or 4 miles to get back to camp. And I'm like, all right, plus the mile and a half we already did. Five and a half miles, that sounds like a nice, healthy hike. That's kind of what I had in mind. And then what happened, Kyle?
We got about 12 miles.
Yeah.
We did about 12 miles.
12 miles.
We got lost. Dave, I don't want to say that my trust in you is diminished.
I understand.
As far as, you know, street justice Dave,
mm-hmm.
survival guy with bug out bags, mm-hmm. Dave, survivalist Dave.
Mm-hmm.
But man, I just watched you do everything wrong for 12 miles. I watched you. First off, you get excited because you're like, this has to be the last hill. Beyond this must be a ranger station. And then you go running up the hill using all your energy. And then you get to the top and just go, fuck! And then you'd be tired. I'm like, yeah, you can't do that. That's
I thought
bad.
We were a mile away. I was like, all right, if I hustle, we could get there in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So I kicked it into overdrive.
I was like, how many layers are you wearing? You're like, too many.
Yeah.
And you had just long underwear and a hooded sweatshirt. I'm like, get some of that off of you. And I'm like, if I'm the one with the common sense on this trip, we're doomed.
Yeah, well, my mistake was I got high at the very beginning. And when I get high, all responsibility and motivation goes out the window. It's like, Kyle, you navigate. Kyle's smart. He'll figure it out. I put all the navigational duties in Kyle's hands.
Big mistake.
12 miles later.
I put it all into the Apple Watch's hands.
What do you think went wrong, though? Did you just misread the map? Was it the map's fault?
I was like, I'll go walk around in the woods. I didn't give it much thought. Which is how you die.
Yeah.
That's how stories start. We're like, I thought I was just going to go wander around out there, and then it's 127 hours, and you got to chew your own arm off.
Yeah. There was, about 5 hours in, I was like, are we going to be on the news? Is it going to be a helicopter?
I had to force you to eat a Kind bar. I was worried, you were breathing in an alarming fashion. I just try and be polite about it, but there was... You were breathing in a way of like, don't roll. Like, I thought, like, if anything happens, like, I'm not carrying you out. That's not.
That's what I was thinking, too. I just can't get injured because Kyle's not going to be able to drag my fat ass out of here. At any point, did you get nervous? Like, oh, shit.
No, I wasn't nervous. I mean, we were on dedicated trails, and there were signs that we clearly got wrong 5 times in a row. But then, right about, I'm like, I got to stay strong for Dave's sake.
Mm-hmm.
I got to be the one who's like, we're fine, Dave.
Yeah.
I got to be the guy, the morale champion of this hike. Hey, Dave, we're just out here getting exercise. Doesn't it feel good? Have a sip of water. Yeah. Have a bit of granola, Dave.
Yeah.
Enjoy the woods. And then we got to about mile 9 where I really thought we were about to see a turn we needed. And then it was just nothing. And that's where I lost it and was done. And then another couple came by. We're like, finally, some other people. Do you guys know where the ranger station is? They're like, we're looking for the same thing. I'm like, we're all doomed. We're doomed out here.
I made it a point not to complain. I mean, to my credit, if your buddy says, hey, let's go on a 4-mile hike, and 11 miles fucking later, I didn't complain at all. For two reasons. Like I said, I put it all into his hands. So, if I relinquish the responsibility, I can't complain about it. Also, I've been eating like shit for a week. I'm like, this is just the universe telling me to get to stepping fast.
Yeah, you were breathing too hard to complain.
Yeah.
I'm sure if you could have caught your breath at any moment, I'm sure you would have cussed me out. But you were just really worried about that oxygen intake at certain points.
Yeah.
And then it rained all week, and you forgot your rain fly for your tent, so you had to sleep in the wet.
Yeah.
And then I went to take a shower at the campground, came back, and you're just standing there with a plastic cup from a hotel room. That you had made a Jim Beam and Coke for yourself, and you were just standing there getting wet, looking wild.
Just standing in the rain.
You were just standing in your campsite with a little plastic rocks glass, all wild-eyed, with a kettlebell. You brought a kettlebell. You brought a 35-pound kettlebell to swing around a campsite.
Fitness is life, baby.
Like a goddamn gorilla. You're just going to drink whiskey and swing a kettlebell around your campsite.
I was so unprepared, and I'm so ashamed, because usually I'm pretty prepared. We went hiking last year, or not, hike camping in Joshua Tree. I planned this shit for literally 3 months. I had a menu planned. I had all kind of gear. This was kind of a last-minute trip, so I wasn't as prepared. I forgot some key essentials, including the most important camping tool, the thing that keeps rain out of your fucking tent. I forgot that.
It's all right. We're only going to a rainforest.
Yeah.
But
I forgot my cooking tripod, my hatchet. Didn't have any of my essential gear.
Well, you had
gear.
A machete.
I had a machete.
You brandished.
I did pack Nerds Clusters and Intamin's cupcakes, so priorities there, Nothing to keep me dry, but I got fucking cupcakes.
It was car camping. Yeah, you napped in the car. I still had fun. I mean, I had a van, so I was dry the whole time.
Yeah.
So
the first night I slept in my soggy tent, and the second night I was like, well, shit, it's raining even harder, so I just crumpled up into my Honda HRV, the passenger seat that doesn't recline all the way back, just sitting in there, being cold and wet, enjoying nature.
Well, I'm sorry, Dave.
That's all right. It's fun getting out there, though.
Yeah.
I cooked a steak the first night. That was exciting.
You did make a steak.
Had a nice ribeye. Ate half of it. Put the rest of it in the cooler. And the next night, I ate it cold in the dark in my car like a Pop-Tart. Just munching on half a ribeye. But
it is. I do like going to campgrounds that are clearly like this was the people that are nature lovers and people that love the outdoors. Because especially living in L.A., there's campgrounds that are 45 minutes outside of the city, and that is just, we just need 6 30-packs of Bud Lights, And that's it. And that's how you camp. And it's like, oh, somebody wanted to listen to EDM at 4 a.m. That's the campgrounds you get there. And so this one was like everybody had their proper gear.
Yeah.
And their, you know, their proper cookware and their uh-huh. tarps. And you were just kettlebell and whiskey drunk. Eating a cold steak.
Yeah.
Like a detective on the wrong assignment. Like, my boy went missing in the woods. I'll find him, man. That means I'm going camping in those woods.
Yeah.
But I still had a good time. I hope you still had fun, Dave.
No,
I hope
it was a total bust. Absolutely right? Beautiful, that area we went to. I guess, you guys are familiar with that state park, the Fern Valley Park? I guess they shot Jurassic Park 2, shot a scene there. I don't know my Star Wars. Which ones were the Ewoks? They shot the Ewok part there. Return of the Jedi, I guess they shot that there. So,
Return of the Jedi said with the least amount of cynicism a Star Wars fan can actually say in that moment. How do you not know which one has the goddamn Ewoks? I can understand not following the series or anything, but that's like one of the main three.
Yeah, that's the one I like the most because I didn't even know it at the time, but I was like, I like those woods are pretty, and now here we are. That's pretty cool.
Well, I will say this now, because we're recording up here in Eureka. We have some great guests that we're going to get to in a second here. But this is going to be a Sasquatch episode, a Bigfoot episode primarily. And people that know the format, I'm usually the cynic. I'm Dave comes in with some blurry something. And I say, no dice. And that's our dynamic. But I do, I come from a place where I do want to believe in it. And I will say that it reaffirmed it, being on that hike, just being on such a narrow pathway amongst ferns and redwoods and completely untraversable, like, bottom growth or whatever they call it. Like, oh, yeah, this is clear. Like, anything can hide out there. Mm-hmm. Anything. Whether it be an outlaw, an animal you're not sure about, you can just go out there and disappear with enough knowledge of the land. I'm like, oh yeah, it's been a while since I've been up here wandering around. That gave it more credibility that if something doesn't want to be found, there's a lot of places to hide.
Yeah.
So that got me a little bit more on board mm-hmm. with the idea of Sasquatch and knowing that there's a lot of unexplored area just in the Pacific Northwest alone. And so I'm back on board, buddy.
Are you?
I mean, so yeah. I was always kind of on board. It's just that, again, the evidence presented was always kind of like, all right, somebody's got to go out to the woods with something better than an iPhone 4 with a cracked camera lens to give me proof. And we have guests today that could perhaps explain some more of that and get me on board. Shall we bring our guests up?
Let's bring out our guest. Let's bring out Dr. Foxmeat.
Local legend, Dr. Foxmeat.
There we go. Local legend, local comedian, local wizard, Dr. Foxmeat, everybody.
Yeah.
Let's bring out Rowdy Kelly. Rowdy Kelly's in the house.
Rowdy Kelly.
He's got some stories and expertise. And last but not least, Robert, is it Leiderman? Robert Leiderman, author of Yeti or Not, Bigfoot expert.
And also the Bluff Creek Project
also,
here.
Also, yeah, this one. Fellas, grab a seat. Thanks for joining us today. You should have dressed up, Dr. Foxmeat.
I know.
Yeah.
So, Robert and Rowdy, part of the Bluff Creek Project. You also have your own podcast regarding the book I'm holding here, the Bluff Creek Project. And we'll get into that. And Dr. Foxmeat is what's the accredited university you received your PhD from?
I learned most of my wizardry on the streets. I'm a street wizard.
Uh-huh.
You know, I did not attend any of the Hogwarts or the institutions.
So, honorary doctorate.
Honorary doctorate. Yeah. Well, let's
online get Phoenix University.
Well, let so now I'll ask, being locals yourself, do you guys all know each other from the neighborhood?
You know, around town, yeah.
Around town?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
This is my first time doing a podcast with a wizard.
Okay. This is the first time we've had a wizard on here, so.
Rowdy, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Rowdy Kelly, and like you were saying, I'm part of the Bluff Creek Project. And we basically rediscovered the Patterson-Gimlin film site the famous 1967 film that everybody's, you know, pretty familiar with.
There
you
go
on your tattoo.
Yeah.
And, you know, you always see that pose of Patty walking across a sandbar. Anyway, it was kind of lost in antiquity, and we basically rediscovered it and verified where it was. Robert and a few guys started it up, and I joined in later on. And then I've produced Finding Bigfoot and a few other Bigfoot shows, and been in the film and television business for about 25 years. Which kind of is what drug me into this Bigfoot world. Actually, Robert and I used to work on shows together when we'd shoot in state parks, a film or something like that. He would come work with us, or I'd go talk to him about looking for locations. So
okay,
he and I kind of knew each other. So yeah,
Robert, your history is a park ranger, and
yes.
How did you guys how did you verify the original site? Like, were you how did you find the original?
I've looked for it and couldn't find it. From Willow Creek, like,
we looked for it downtown, for 12 miles the other day, we couldn't find it.
Downtown Willow Creek, where they have like the museum and stuff. Where from there, where would you go?
Another couple more hours.
A couple hours.
Yeah, it's Willow Creek is off 299, but in order to get to the film site, you basically have to go towards Orleans, through Hoopa up towards Orleans, Hatchwitchbeck, Orleans. Go north on the Go Road, 17 miles, make a left, drive another 8.5 more miles, get on more dirt roads to eventually get there. And then you have to walk about a mile to get to the actual site.
So. Okay.
Now that the site's known, do you get kind of the fans showing up there, like the Area 51 freaks that'll come, like, creeping around and getting in trouble out there? Do you have, like, is there more traffic coming through that area that you have to police of, like...
Well, actually... We don't get that many people to go up there and find it because, well, you saw it's still quite a chore to get there. I've got a lot of people, when I contact and talk to them, they still don't find it because they get lost on the way.
Yeah. So you're just saving more people who got lost looking for the thing than actually getting up there.
They still get lost. We can put some signs up. We do have a couple signs that we put up. It's not like the Forest Service put signs up there. It's like an adventure to go find it. But in order to pretty much get there, when you get down to the burn parking area, we have a sign there. Get down the bottom of the hill, we have a sign there.
Yeah.
And then you kind of walk this trail heading back over, and then we have another little sign there. And then you get to the film site, we don't have a sign that says you're here.
Okay.
You kind of have to figure that part out because there's like a trail that goes there, and then the river kind of makes a 90-degree turn. We call it the bowling alley, and it heads out. You go beyond that, you got to pretty much walk all the way up the canyon. Oh,
so it weeds out some of the nutters. Because I would figure, Roswell, things like that, you have the true believers, then it also attracts some of the fringe element to come in.
Sure, and if you do your research, you can find a map. That's part of our project's duty, was to make it safe or knowledgeable of where the site was. Because it's a public area. Mm-hmm. It's Six Rivers National Forest. Anybody can go there. And arguably... probably not arguably, it's the mecca of Bigfooting.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
that's where you want to go. You know, this is why most of us got into Bigfoot was the Patterson-Gimlin film. Mm-hmm. Whether it's authentic or not, that's really kind of what we're leaning towards, you know, trying to figure out if it is authentic or not. We're doing all kinds of studies on it. We've measured it up and down. We know exactly where Roger was standing. We know where the creature was walking. And all that kind of stuff. So more people do go down there now. Yes.
Which way are you leaning as far as the legitimacy of the Patterson-Gimlin film?
In my personal opinion, it's too good of a job for two cowboys at that time. There's too many convincing tendons and muscles that are flexing and moving.
That hernia in the quad, do you know?
Yeah, just the shape of the quad itself. Mm-hmm. I mean, whether it's a guy in a suit, he's pretty built, you know, if we're showing that kind of stuff. The evidence to me goes towards it's just too good.
Yeah.
You know, there's too many good things in that action of the creature itself and the fur itself, too. Mm-hmm. That's part of the mystery of this project and this whole film is the guy that shot the film is very dubious. So there's a lot of questions.
Oh, really?
It's possible. This guy was talented. It might be possible for him.
Dubious is such a classy term to give to somebody. It's like, I don't know. They might have been bullshitting us the whole time. Dubious is a...
Yeah. And both Robert and I have met Bob Gimlin, who's still alive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know, Bob was the guy that actually was looking at the creature the whole time, because Roger was had his eye behind the film, uh-huh. behind the camera. We actually have that camera, too. We're trying to recreate that film. We've done it twice so far. We're going to do it one more time this year with the actual same camera and 16-millimeter film and using the subject. It's a whole different look. When you'd get there, you would not recognize it from the film at all. It's grown up. It's a 55-year-old forest now.
Yeah.
So you got mature trees there. We got alders and maples and firs, you know, that have filled up the whole view shed. But that was part of our project, was trying to figure out exactly where it was at, was to see, you know, that background, those background trees, and see that scene throughout the whole forest.
Been talking for a while now about Athletic Greens. I use it almost every day when I can remember to do so. We all know that diet and nutrition is such a part of my life, but no, seriously, it is becoming more a part of my life because it's so darn easy with Athletic Greens. Started taking it a few months after the wedding because I gained a lot of that wedding weight back, and I need, you know, I don't have the discipline to just, you know, do my own thing, carve my own path. So now Athletic Greens is making it so easy for me. What's in this stuff? Well, with one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. The special blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, aging, all that stuff. It's lifestyle friendly, whether you eat keto, paleo, vegan, dairy-free, gluten-free, contains less than 1 gram of sugar, no GMOs, no nasty chemicals or artificial anything, and it still tastes good. It's got a nice little, just a real subtle tropical taste to it. Nothing like those horrible green chalky smoothies or other powders and mixes. This stuff, boom, you throw it in 8 to 12 ounces of water, shake it up, suck it down, not bad at all. Costs less than $3 a day. You're investing in your health. I guarantee you that's cheaper than your coffee habit. Athletic Greens has over 7,000 five-star reviews, trusted by leading health experts such as Tim Ferriss and Michael Gervais. Do something good for your body. Do something simple that you don't have to think about. One scoop in 8 to 12 ounces of water. You're good for the whole day. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with a convenient daily nutrition. One scoop and a cup of water every day. It really is that simple. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1 year supply of immune supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/boogie. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/boogie to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/boogie. Hey, who here wants better sex? All right, well, get in line. No, I can't really. Oh, well, no, me personally, I'm not going to be able to help you out with that. But our friends at AdamandEve.com, they are here for all that stuff. The best way to get started is to go to AdamandEve.com right now. Adam and Eve is offering 50% off just about any item, but that's not all. When you get that one item, they will also send you 3 bonus sexy items and 6 free movies. Oh boy, we've made all the jokes for years now. More than that, Adam and Eve wants to make your life easy. They offer discreet shipping as your privacy is a priority, plus free shipping on your entire order. Doesn't matter how much you spend or what you buy, all will be packaged and sent discreetly for free. That's 50% off one item and 10 free gifts to boot. Bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom. Just go to adamandeve.com, select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy. It could be a movie. It could be a tarp you lay down. Whatever. Just get your stuff. Enter code BOOGIE at checkout. You're going to get 50% off almost any one item plus 10 free gifts. They keep wanting me to say that. 3 bonus items, 6 free movies, plus free shipping. You got to use code BOOGIE, though. That's B-O-O-G-I-E in that order. Code BOOGIE at adamandeve.com. If you don't use that code, we don't get the credit, and you don't get the discount. Exclusive offer specific to our podcast, so be sure to use that code BOOGIE. Get that discount. Get those free goodies. Get in there and have some fun. Adamandeve.com, promo code BOOGIE. Fresh from San Diego, California, comes the only sunglasses brand I'm ever going to wear ever again in my life. I swear, I'm talking about Blenders Eyewear.
You're going to be just as hooked as I was when you see how awesome these shades are. I went with the Swagger Cat model. Really captures my essence. They're sturdy. I accidentally washed them in the wash. I washed and dried them. They were in my pockets. I sometimes forget to clear my pockets before I do laundry. Didn't hurt them at all. Very sturdy, very stylish, very affordable. Chase Fisher started Blenders by selling his beachy shades out of a backpack while doubling as a surf instructor on Pacific Beach. His goal? To create an adventurous, mid-priced eyewear option with the same cool factor as the other leading styles. Unlike expensive big brand shades that you're probably going to lose or smash, Blenders are actually affordable, so you're not going to cry as much when the inevitable happens, even if you happen to wash them. And I didn't cry because they're sturdy. They didn't break. But even if they did, I didn't pay too much for these. I didn't pay for anything, because they're hooking me up. But even if you paid full price, they're very affordable. Blender's team of in-house designers are constantly coming out with new styles, from orange polarized wraparounds, tortoise shell frames with purple lenses, to classic gold arms on black lenses. And it's not just sunglasses. Blender's has prescription glasses as well. They have readers. They have blue lights. Everything you need, even a snow collection with goggles and accessories. That's exciting. Live life in forward motion with Blenders today. Here's what you do. To score 15% off your Blenders purchase, visit BlendersEyewear.com, enter promo code BOOGIEVIP. That's BlendersEyewear.com, code BOOGIEVIP for 15% off. Blenders, rocked with pride worldwide. How long did that take to once you decided, hey, let's go find the exact location? I mean, is that a weeks, months, years? How long did that take?
Well, it depends where you start. Mm-hmm. Like you start back in 2003, called the Big Confusion, where it was the everybody who knew anything about the film site, they all showed up, and the big day was like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. It's in Willow Creek in 2003. So mm-hmm. Greens were there, Bob was there. A lot of people were down there. They couldn't all agree upon where it was, and that's the thing about it. Everybody knows where Area 51 is, right?
Yeah.
And you're thinking that this is the Patterson-Gimlin film site. Everybody should know where it is, right? But that wasn't the case. You wonder, why were people confused as why this is not the location? But you go back in time, in 1964 was the big flood, and pretty much silted everything over. That's why it's all clear.
Uh-huh.
And 1967 was the film. And since then, the trees were growing back. So as time progressed along, the forest grew, and it got to a point where it was not recognizable by a lot of people. So when they got down there in 2003 to pretty much figure it all out, it's like, it's over there. You know, they can't figure out
yeah.
where. So we had people who had preconceived ideas of where it should be based on what they remember, based on the film they watched, and based on the photographs. And now they're down there, and it looks nothing like it. So that starts the little doubt there. So in 2003, I got to speak at the salmon dinner. So I got to put up my little presentation I give to the park, and I got to eat some salmon and entertain people for a little bit. But at that point, the film site didn't really matter that much to me. It was just the location, right? It wasn't until later on when I met Stephen Strayford, and Stephen Strayford had this idea, like he wants to go find the place. And I didn't even know it was lost, personally. I had no idea. So him and Ian were working on it, and eventually I got suckered in on it, and I was doing some videography work, just filming people doing research, and I interview people who have sightings or whatever. So I was doing a lot of that. So then I said, oh, it'd be great to film you guys, figuring out where it was. So in 2010 was the official start day. It was in September, and I went into Stephen's bookstore, Stephen Stroyfer's Bigfoot Books in Willow Creek.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you didn't go there when you went
to No, all that stuff was closed. I was there pretty early in the morning.
My store is closed a lot,
yeah.
So it's anyhow. So the museum's not open except for by appointment. You can go down there. You can make a phone call. There's a number there, and the person will come down. They're all volunteers, and they'll open it up and let you see inside and stuff. But anyhow, so 2010 we started the process. I started filming it, and then the next thing you know, I was a member of the team because I started thinking about it. And sitting there with Steven as he had his computer all set up, and he was running down the PowerPoint while I'm filming him, it was just like, he's done this before. He had a blog, he did it a lot, arguing about different things. So I was filming him going down that, and I was thinking, this would be fun to find this place.
Yeah.
How hard can it be?
Yeah.
You know.
So we started the project, and then there were five locations where people thought they were. I mean, everybody's right until they're proven wrong, right? So one by one, we had to disprove. What happens is sometimes people will take all this information. That, let's say you started some research, and you did a lot of work. And then I come along going, well, you already did all the work. I'll just take what you did, and then I'll add to it, right? But what if you made a mistake? What if
that's our whole podcast is him.
Yeah.
Looking at somebody else's research and being me telling him to Google, like, look at the second page of Google search results. And that's where they disprove everything.
Well, you can relate then.
Yeah. Your day as park ranger, did they overlap with you searching for this location?
You mean, did I tell them what I was doing?
Yeah. I'm wondering, like being a park ranger, was there more people on your side and believers because of how much time they spend and how familiar they are with the parks?
Or is that like a cop trying to solve a crime on his own time?
Well, if you represent an agency, and if every time you say something, it reflects that agency.
Yeah.
So let's say you believe in little green men, and then you start talking about believing in little green men, and now they think that you got some guy with a badge and a gun running around believing in little green men. Yeah. And so the agencies aren't really supportive of that. Yeah. So what we do in our own time is our own time. So I was actually giving a presentation to the public, like the park you went to. They didn't have any campfire programs, but if you would have showed up for a campfire program, you would have saw a guy with a hat and wearing clothes, you know, badges, giving an interpretive program about what's going on. Well, I did that for the parks, and I did it about Bigfoot because it's an entertaining subject.
Sure.
You would have to agree.
Absolutely.
So people go to campfires or they go to bars and drink and listen to people talk about Bigfoot, but they want to hear about it. So I would deliver these interpretive programs but never give an opinion just based on facts. So now here this guy on his own time doing Bigfoot stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I got in trouble before when I took pictures, but that's a different story. We'll leave it for later. Mm-hmm.
That's a soundbite we will make sure to have context around.
Yeah.
I got in trouble before I took some pictures. So we'll talk about it later.
So I had a cease and desist order by my supervisor saying, you can't be doing any of this research at work. I go, well, you know, I give these presentations on the subject matter and I have to research it. Because what happened was BFRO came down, they were doing this thing. They said, the Bigfoot was here, it rubbed against the tree. It was at Humboldt Redwoods, it was on the river trail. Kid tying his shoe, dad sees half-naked individual move back and forth, rubs back against the tree. He gets excited about it. He contacts BFRO. BFRO come up on Labor Day weekend. That's kind of busy.
Yeah.
There's 3 days in the park you don't want to be there, but that's the only days you get off, so you go, right? Mm-hmm. It's really busy. So they show up and they have this big old speaker on their vehicle. And it was a call blasting. Have you familiar with call blasting?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, imagine super, super loud noises while you're trying to camp.
Yeah.
Like, you're trying to sleep. What's that? Oh, there's nothing. Just do a fellow report later for it. So we told you can't do it here. But anyhow, so I saw in the BFRO that there was this place that they went, and I go, that's those guys. And they had these pictures. I go, I know where that is. So I went up there to investigate it, and they were a little off on some of the information. So I got the brilliant idea. Maybe I should just write something. I should write, tell them they're misinformed and type it all up pretty and then take pictures. And then my partner didn't want to be there, so I was standing there in the picture wearing my Stetson, because you've got to wear your Stetson when you get photographed, part of the uniform. And next thing you know, it's like Matt liked it, so he put it in the thing, and then somebody saw it, and somebody complained, and then I get called in the office. What are you doing investigating? It's my job to investigate reports. Anyhow, so after the cease and desist, that was over. And the next thing you know, I got this, hey, you know, Real Scary Stories is doing like this thing and they want a ranger to talk and say there's Bigfoots out there. So they talked to my department talked to somebody else, and then my department decided that you could only ask these questions. And okay, so I get my state unit, I get paid state time, I drive up there, I get to Crescent City. The sun's going down, it's beautiful. It's an orange sky. You know the sun? You probably didn't see it these last few days, but we have one.
Yeah.
So it's like beautiful, the sun is setting on the ocean, it's got that orange stuff. And I'm in a freshly cleaned patrol pickup truck. And I'm sitting on the driver's side with my Stetson, looking out, and they're interviewing me, and the sun's setting, it's cold on the side of the car. And then they proceed to ask me all these questions that aren't on this list.
Yeah.
So I go, oh, I can't answer that. I can't answer that. I can't answer that. I can't answer that.
Yeah.
So I got the cutting room floor, and a guy who had a cast with hair fibers in it, and the sun was setting behind him, and they filmed him. That was cool. It was good. But going from cease and desist to, we're going to pay you to do it, but you got to answer certain questions. So I know I got off that little thing there.
Nice,
but
thanks.
But anyhow, so going back to 2003, uh-huh. getting involved, and then Stephen, and then now I'm filming this, and I'm putting up these little 10-minute segments of our research on the BF4L YouTube channel. And next thing you know, I'm now speaking, I'm now a member of this team, and we put up like 72 of those little
now
things.
Now you're the guy.
Yeah,
now you're the point person for
yeah, me. Now all of a sudden, I'm a member of this three-person team investigating these five sites that are the alleged sites. And so we had to start from the very beginning. See, I brought it around? Yeah.
I appreciate
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So we had to start.
I knew you were going to get there.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah. So we started with each one, and we ended up disproving each one except one because we had to go through the ritual of starting from scratch. Because if you get one thing wrong, it multiplies. And I have a reputation. I want to be that guy who doesn't jump to conclusions because I want to be respectable, right? Like a lot of us,
yeah.
when you get involved with the subject, you just go out. Let's say you want to pull a surprise on somebody. You want to go hoax them, right? Because it's fun. Like you sneak up to his car when he's sleeping in it. Yeah, if you had a few beers, you sleep in his car, you go up and you knock on the window and you go, ah!
Yeah.
Yeah, and if we did that, then we're a hoaxer from day one.
Yeah, so you've undermined all your efforts.
Right.
Yeah.
So you want to make sure everything you do is good. And you also want to make sure you do your homework. Because if you kind of a half-ass approach to something, somebody's going to find a mistake. They always do. That's your job, right?
Well,
to find mistakes.
Yeah, well, our whole show is a half-assed approach to everything.
Yeah.
But I like that. Okay, so I like that you're employed by the Forest Service then was like, oh, we can use you as like, because isn't the idea to just generate interest in the national parks in the first place? And if this is an interesting subject, why not present it in a factual manner or in a research manner? And I like that like they kind of made you now the X-Files of the U.S. Forestry Service, of like the special division, kind of like, we'll let you have that. And like, instead of like shutting you out, like, no, this is valuable. I like that, like, they brought you into it.
Yeah, well, actually, I work for the state parks, not the Forest Service, but...
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
I don't know my...
I know, we all look alike. We get
authority.
Yeah.
Stetsons across the board. I don't
yeah.
know who's who.
Well, I don't
hats.
Know if the Forest Service wears Stetsons, but... parks
call them. Yeah.
But close. Mounties wear them.
Yeah, Mounties. Yeah.
Yeah.
But. Dr. Foxmeat, you're a local, let's just say, legend.
Yes.
You grew up around here?
I did not.
Okay.
But I've been here for quite some time.
You've been here a while.
Yeah.
Any stories? Any encounters?
The extent of my direct experience with Bigfoot or Sasquatch has been Bobo. Anybody familiar with Bobo? The
mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bobo.
Find a Bigfoot.
Drunk off of keg beer, hanging out on my back porch doing Bigfoot calls. And then Matt Redbeard, who I'm sure you guys
Redbeard,
know.
Redbeard, sure.
He was out on my back porch one time, and he heard some branches creaking and cracking, and he was dead set that was definitely Sasquatch out there. I think maybe on Bobo's, you know, because Bobo told me straight up, like, you know, the place you're living, there's definitely Sasquatch out here. Now, I said there was a lot of keg beer involved, so it's hard to say, but...
Yeah,
that's been my direct experience with it. But I mean, I grew up with Leonard Nimoy, you know, the Patterson-Gimlin footage. I mean, you know, and that's part of the reason why I, you know, wanted to be in this area.
Yeah, some of it. Yeah, Eureka seems to have a lot of red eye witness accounts of things where I'm like, all right, well, I saw something. What did you do before you saw a thing? Well, there was some mushrooms.
Well, and there's a lot. There's a lot there that is, you know, like you're saying, that Patterson-Gimlin footage is just so captivating and convincing. When you look at because the term Bigfoot was, the difference between Bigfoot and Sasquatch, Bigfoot, the term, was actually coined in the Eureka Times Standard, and it ended up being sort of a hoaxy sort of a thing. So it's this constant push and pull for me. You know, I, you know, you mentioned X-Files. I want to believe, you know, yeah. But there's definitely this constant push and pull.
Yeah, that's been the theme of, like, when we ever talk about a subject, is that there's enough true calamity in the world that it's hard, the older you get, it's harder to allow your imagination to take root. Like, you just look at the news and be like, what am I going to do? Like, daydream about something that might make me happy? I got to worry about a war in Ukraine and the wage disparity and everything. It's like, so I approach all these subjects from that standpoint. Like, I want to be on board with it. It's when, like Rob, like you were saying, if the research isn't done, the evidence isn't really looked at from a inquisitive viewpoint, just like, well, look, here's a video. Like, all right, has anybody looked at the video, like really looked at it, or just went like, I'm going to believe, so I'm going to believe any piece of evidence that comes along. And that's what undermines so many of these accounts for me, is because nobody's kind of even double-checked themselves because of how bad they want something to be. That they never even like, well, I gotta.
Right. Yeah, that's always the hardest part.
Yeah. Yeah.
And working on the shows that I've worked on, I've interviewed probably 60, 70 people, you know, for the shows. And once you interview that many people, there's always that chance that, you know, somebody's actually telling the truth.
Yeah.
And I've talked to a lot of old timers, you know, talking about being old. You know, it's not just young people seeing mm-hmm. this. These are old timers that are coming out of the woods talking about it because 50 years ago or 40 years ago, it was not a cool thing to say.
Yeah.
You got ridiculed. But now with all the productions that are being made about it and a little more prevalence for people to believe in it, they're coming forward. And these guys are woodsmen, too. I mean, they know the difference between a bear, and they know the difference between an owl hoot and stuff like that. But what you guys are getting into and what he's talking about is an experience. Mm-hmm. You go out in the woods at night, and you hear something creaking and cracking, mm-hmm. and that just becomes an experience. We're never going to prove Bigfoot that way. We're going to have either another really good video with some physical evidence or a body.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be proven by going out, and you guys were talking about this, you know, what's the difference between squatching and just going camping?
Yeah, hanging out.
Not really much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not really.
Just gotta be out there.
Yeah. You gotta be out there. Yeah. And what, you know, Robert and I are fairly seasoned in being in the woods. We can differentiate what the sounds are out there most of the time. Mm-hmm. But both he and I have had experiences where, well, no, I've never heard that before.
What's been the most compelling?
Compelling for me was showing up at a very remote location in a 3-car convoy. Me and one other person, Robert and his son, were in another car, and then one other car behind us. And it's a one-way in lake up in the mountains. And we pull in probably 11:30 at night, something like that. Because we had a big camp out about 7 miles away, and there were several people down at that camp out, but that was 2,000 feet below and, you know, several miles away. Anyway, we pull in, and as soon as Bart and I get out, we hear what Bobo does exactly, just the huge male call, I guess is what they're saying it is. And we're like, man, that could be Bobo. But we know Bobo. He's 7 miles away. He's not anywhere close to us. Mm-hmm. And there was no evidence of anybody else being there.
Yeah.
Only Bart and I heard it as we stepped out. But it was very loud, and it was echoing off. We kind of figured out where it was. And we eventually did a hike over that direction, me with a sound recorder and him with a FLIR. I think he had his FLIR. Nothing really happened. We had some kind of weird, heavy thud. But that's the closest thing I've ever had. It was a very definitive call that I don't think anybody could have replicated that.
What's your initial reaction? Do you get scared? Do you get excited? Like finally hearing something in person, or are you just kind of like, whoa, oh wow, this is
right.
Even though I've been doing this all the time, I wasn't ready to hear it.
Well, when you hear something like that, and I'd only probably been involved with the Bigfoot phenomena for about 2 years. So that when you first get into something like this, you're looking at every video and you're really doing your research and you're out in the woods and you're a little more sensitive. Yeah. Over the years, you become a little bit mute to all that kind of of stuff. Now, if I heard something like that again, that would have been incredible. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at that time, yeah, it definitely excited us. Bart, who is a much more seasoned Bigfooter, so to say, was super excited about it, you know, and he's pretty convinced that that was, you know, a male Sasquatch. We were in a prime location that had previous sightings.
I mean, as much as I love camping, I'm an absolute coward. And any sound, I'm just like, that, no, I'm sitting in the car. Like, I've gone backpacking by myself maybe overnight a couple times, and I didn't sleep at all. Any twig that snaps, I'm like, it's just a series of creature?
There's so many creatures that are nocturnal, so they're out moving around at night. And actually, here in Northern California, we have a huge population of black bears.
Yeah.
And black bears can move around. They move around at night. Mm-hmm. They can get right into your campground without even hearing them before you hear them step on something and break it. There's a lot of things out there that are going to make sounds at night. And it's night is a whole different experience.
Yeah.
And like I said, you're only going to have an experience at night. Nothing's going to be proven by what you hear or you think you saw or whatever. Even with our FLIRs or our therms, those are just going to give us evidence, you know, to keep us going. I don't think it's going to prove anything, though.
Why do you think you pick anything up with looking for body heat and those kind of way you could scan for natural heat, animal heat, what have you?
Oh, we have a friend who's definitely picked him up.
Really?
With the FLIR, with thermals. And Bart, Robert did a follow-up investigation on that incident. And actually, Robert and I were the first ones to see that footage. And we spent, you know, several hours going over that footage because Bart had sent it to us. And we looked at it and we made all kinds of speculations of how many there were and how they were moving around. And it definitely was possible to get them, you know. And we're in the group that it's a living, it's not a apparition, it's not a alien, you know. No, if it's out there, it's a real.
It's not going through portals.
Flesh and blood. No portals. No, they're just. I think what people are experiencing there is an animal that is elusive and adapt to being in the woods, and they're just not used to something disappearing that quick on them or being able to.
Now, do you clash with them? Like, you're searching for Sasquatch, but somebody's like, he's going through portals, and you're like, you guys are fucking idiots.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, we're part of the few groups that clash really hard. Yeah, we're hard logic, you know. Yeah,
yeah, can we just all get along?
Yeah. Well, that's what I was saying with the distinction between Sasquatch and Bigfoot. You know, there seems to be. Oh, you don't see him because he's, you know, he's magic and he'll, you know, sprinkle some dust and turn into a puff of air kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You were talking about calls. Outside the Patterson-Gimlin film, my favorite piece of, I guess if you want to call it evidence, I'm sure you're familiar with the Sierra sounds, Ron Moorhead.
Never heard of them before.
Amazing. Just absolutely. I'm assuming you're being facetious.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts
Rob's
on the
got
Sierra?
A real dry sense of humor.
For people who don't know what I'm talking about, was it 1974, 76? Sometime in the 70s, Ron Moorhead and a few other guys were camping up in the Sierra Nevada mountains, and I guess they ran across what they described as a whole family of Sasquatch, and they got out their audio recorders, and it's fascinating. Like, it's not just calls.
Yeah.
It's like language and vocalizations, and it's incredible.
Robert can follow up on this, but my direct opinion of that, it's too good of a recording.
Really?
It's like they had it right in front of their mouth.
Yeah.
You know, and that was my problem with it, mm-hmm. is how did they get that good of quality recording that they actually put a microphone out
especially
in the woods is what supposedly what he did, mm-hmm. and then they came up and around it. But, in turn, Robert's got a kind of an antidote to that, because there's some similarities to that.
A little story, since you guys spent some time in the Redwoods, this story will reflect not quite where you hiked, because you guys were lost, you can't remember where you went, but kind of the same general area is...
I saw the GPS afterwards on my Apple Watch.
Okay. It
showed me exactly where I went. Once I got back to cell service, I could see where I went.
Kind of go like this?
Yeah. A few laps.
Yeah. It's starting to look familiar. You can't go by that moss on the north side, because...
No,
it gets a little confusing.
Load of crap.
Yeah, real confusing. So the first BFR expedition was in 2004. And my job was to set it up. And so that was the first public BFR expeditions. And a couple years into that, we had this group called the Shelby Car Club. And it was kind of a nice group. We kind of brought them up. But I think I'm getting a little ahead. So let's go back to the big expedition that we set up. Well, I had Ron Moorhead and the other guy, both the two guys that came in. They were my guests, and they talked about the Sierra Sounds. I didn't know these guys. I heard about them. I hadn't listened to any of the footage, but I got to have them come in. So they both gave their talk. And we are pretty much in the Redwood Country, and they're giving their talk, and they're talking about how they got things recorded, what was going on. And Ron's got a great voice, narration, really good voice. And he narrates the whole thing, which is nicely done. But anyhow, so I'm sitting back listening to these guys going, really? So my job was to sell the CDs for $10 a piece, while they were giving the talk. And everybody was sucking it up. You're like, seriously? I can make those noise. I can do all that.
That is kind of what it sounds like.
So listen,
like a caveman.
So I'm kind of listening to all this going, okay, whatever. And they were nice guys. So 9 months later, I'm with Bobo. We're on the side of this mountain. We just did the Shelby Car Club for a special guest. And they basically left. A lot of stuff happened. So now it's just our time, right? Because when you have your clients, you spend your client time, right? You cater to their needs and you make sure, they get no guaranteed Bigfoot sighting, but as long as they think it's one, that's okay too.
It's like charter fishing.
Yeah.
Could take you out for a good time. We don't know if anything's going to happen. But.
Right. You're selling experience, and that's more important
than
anything else.
Yeah.
So they leave it a good note. So they left it a good note, and they had some weird stuff happen to them. We also found some foot impressions and hand impressions in an area where this all went down. So when the clients were done, it was our turn to go in and see what's going on. So we did. We went in there. We set our place up in the daytime so we could find it at night. And then we come back at night. So Bobo and Malagai from Yakima, they were all set on the hillside. It was dark. I was going to walk in with Matt Moneymaker, but he changed his mind because it was dark and scary. So we're just getting ready to leave. And all of a sudden, something huge just crashed into the brush at the starting point of the trailhead. Well, that's scary. I don't care how brave you are. It's like, you don't expect that. So anyhow, I go back out the trail. I go, there's something over there. So Matt shines his light everywhere. Just because you saw him do it in the show doesn't mean he doesn't do it in real life.
Yeah.
But he shines the light everywhere. That's kind of it's a protocol. But anyhow, so now he doesn't want to go. So I'm by myself. So I got to get there. So I'm walking along the trail and intermittent shooting the light so I can see where my next thing is, because I don't want to ruin light discipline because it ruins your eyes too. And I successfully made it there. I wasn't eaten, which is good. So we sat up on the hillside, and Bobo likes to cook bacon. So we cooked bacon at 10 o'clock. We ate the bacon.
No shit.
We cooked some more bacon. We ate the bacon. We gave some to Mel. We cooked some more bacon, and we ate all the rest of the bacon, so it was gone. But the whole idea at night on the hillside in the dark is you're cooking bacon, and all those smells are making their way down to the bottomlands and the swamps. So we're like hoping it's going to work out. So we hear the typical owls, nothing exciting. So now Bobo and I, we're trying to stay awake. Bobo's this big, so I can lean against his back. We're like back to back, and we're like half asleep, but we're really not asleep. But, we hear things. And all of a sudden, here there's... And I'm awake now. And I'm like, look at Bobo. He looks at me. His eyes are big. And I go, what is that? What's that? I don't know. You're supposed to know these things, Bobo. How can you not know? So my brain flashes back. Of course, after I recovered. But my brain flashes back to 9 months before that, before expedition, Ron Moorhead and the other guy are playing these CDs. And I'm going, I can do that. I tell you, that's like a recheck right there. I heard those sounds on that hillside, and there's three of us. Mel's up top. I'm with Bobo, and it's just down there. You can't see anything, but you can tell where it came from.
How far away do you think this is?
I'd say it was probably a good 70 yards or less. More think about it. It was close enough to hear it like it's right there, but yet we were on a hillside, so you take that into consideration, and then at night sounds travels quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I don't know what did that. I try to be as...
It sounded like an old Japanese man.
Yeah, a little samurai guy out there lost.
What are you worried about? Like, you're trying to flood nature with the smell of bacon. Are you worried about what else might just be like, oh, shit, bacon? Because, like, I mean, the whole forest of, like, oh, that's bacon. Like, not just Bigfoot, but every other single animal that likes bacon, which is all of them.
Well, we talked about an adventure. You want your adventure. That's. I don't recommend some of these things we did. You know, this is some of the process. But we got a response, and that was the whole point.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm following Bobo's lead because he knows what he's doing, right? He's been doing this for centaurs. You know, he knows exactly what he's doing. And then when nothing happened, we got a little disappointed. And then all of a sudden, this happens. And now you're like, what the heck is that? Yeah. So we stayed up as long as we could. It was time to go to sleep. And then once we did that, we heard movement on the perimeter of where we were. We couldn't see. Therm didn't pick it up. Nothing picked it up. But it was moving on the outside.
Really?
And so do I still use bacon? When you can. You know, it's always a good tool, but be ready for it. But that goes back to that sound where you hear something and you think this is full of, you know, dookie.
Yeah.
And then it happens to you. It's like every time you hear somebody tell a story and you're like, they're making this shit up.
Yeah.
And then you get to experience that story and now other people are saying you're making this
shit up. Personal experience, yeah.
But how do you prove some of that? That's the tough thing. Mm-hmm. Because it happens. But how do you prove what did that? There's no foot impressions. You didn't see anything. You smell something skunky. Mm-hmm. But then there's skunk plants nearby. Was it that?
Yeah.
It made that sound. Was that an owl you heard? Was that a barred owl? And I've heard lots of barred owls. They sound like monkeys talking.
Yeah.
But they didn't sound like that to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we've got other stories of having rocks tossed at you, seeing shadows moving, finding foot impressions that are bare, double taps. And you start thinking about, what do I really hear? Like, nothing like a great adventure when you're by yourself and you're in the middle of nowhere and you hear, Robert. And you're like, that's my name.
Yeah.
Why am I hearing my name being called? So that's something else that happens. You spend a long time outside, start hearing weird stuff. And it makes you wonder, am I sane? Am I crazy? Did my brain just flip this over and make it that way?
Yeah.
Or is there something out here that we don't quite understand that has the ability to mimic or ability to throw rocks, make call sounds, hide from cameras? Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wait for it. Go through portals.
Hey, yeah. That's one of the theories. That's one of the ideas.
But how do we disprove a portal?
Yeah.
Seriously. How do you disprove it?
I mean, we've hung on the idea that, like, you know, think about what you didn't know 100 years ago. So what are we going to know 100 years from now? So just keeping that, like, again, that's, like, more fuel in the flames of imagination to allow things that seem unbelievable now, but knowing, like, we don't know all the science. We will never know all the science. We at every point in humankind, we're like, well, now we're the smartest. For now.
Yeah.
But in 5 years, we're going to be smarter than this. And we're going to disprove things and prove things as we go along. So... sometimes it's like, do you get the personal satisfaction of knowing you've had your own experiences and knowing that you believe, and how much do you, when do you encounter a point where, like, I'm sick of trying to prove to somebody else that I know what I saw? We have a friend who's got some, he's a friend of the show, Ryan Singer, and he's got some wild tales about everything, but he always prefaces it by saying, like, I don't need you to believe me, but I need you to know that I believe what I'm telling you.
Well, and that's kind of the core of all my beliefs when it comes to any of this type of stuff is, take Bigfoot, for example, hundreds, if not thousands of eyewitnesses. Are they all wrong? Are they all full of shit? Are they all mistaking it for a bear or something? Like, a high percentage, possibly, but some of these folks with no motivation to lie about it. Just regular folks who are like, this is what I saw. Like, I believe some of those folks.
Sure. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's why it's hard to get into that 100% mm-hmm. that they're out there until you get that visual.
All right, let's talk about your online privacy. We all know that these big tech companies, they pay next to nothing in taxes, but boy, do they take. They take all of your data, your personal data. They grab your web history, your email metadata, video searches, all this stuff, to create a detailed profile on you, and then they sell that off to the highest bidder. Good luck with whoever's bidding on my stupid web history. Companies aren't just selling products anymore, they're selling you. You have become the product. To protect your identity and data from these tech giants, I recommend using ExpressVPN every time you go online. Think about all the websites you visit, Facebook, Twitter, Google, what have you. Everything you do and say online is tracked by these giant corporations. Using your public IP address, they can uniquely match your activity and know your location. ExpressVPN makes you anonymous online by camouflaging your IP address and replacing it with a different secure IP of your choice. ExpressVPN also encrypts all of your data so that it's protected from hackers and anyone else that's trying to spy on you. What I like most about ExpressVPN is how easy it is to use. Just download the app on your phone or your computer, tap one button, boom, you're protected. I figured it out. You can figure it out. It is so simple. So if you're like me and you believe your internet data belongs to you and no one else, especially greedy corporations, then ExpressVPN, Victor Papa November, ExpressVPN is the answer. Protect your data with the number one rated VPN provider today. Visit expressvpn.com/boogie. That's ExpressVPN.com/boogie. All right, Simply Safe. You guys know I love the break-in protection that my Simply Safe home security system gives me, but it's not always outside forces that you need protection from. This is Joshua's story, a Simply Safe customer from Indiana. A few months ago, he fell asleep with pizza rolls still in the oven. This could have been disastrous, thousands of dollars in damages to his kitchen, his home, maybe even worse. Luckily, Joshua has a comprehensive Simply Safe system equipped with everything to prevent break-ins and also smoke detectors to sniff out fires. He startled awake to the sound of a 95-decibel alarm from his Simply Safe base station. Seconds later, he got a call from Simply Safe Professional Monitoring. The pizza rolls didn't make it, but Joshua did. He believes Simply Safe probably saved his life that night. Too bad my father-in-law didn't have Simply Safe in his cabin. Oh boy, protected people with their guard down is just one of the reasons more than 4 million people use and love Simply Safe. With a comprehensive Simply Safe system and 24/7 professional monitoring, you always have someone looking out for you. Plans cost under $1 a day with no long-term contracts or hidden fees ever. You can customize the perfect system for your home in just a few minutes at simplysafe.com/boogie. That's SimpliSafe, simplysafe.com/boogie. Go today, claim a free indoor security camera plus 20% off with interactive monitoring. Go to simplysafe.com/boogie.
But yeah, I you can imagine a lot of different things of what these creatures are. And if they've been around humans for long enough, and they're doing what they're doing, they've probably adapted to staying away from us, mm-hmm. at the ultimate degree, because at one time I imagine we tried to exterminate them in the past, yeah. And so they probably learned that to stay away from us. Mm-hmm. But I'm with you. I've just talked away too many people that are convincing, sane, and they have no reason to lie.
Yeah.
Has the increase in all the forest fires that have been happening recently created any change of sightings or proof that's been found?
I don't think so, as far as in our network of sightings and stuff like that, not that we've heard. But I do have witnesses that I've talked to that have experienced seeing a family of Bigfoot during a fire. As he was escaping on a road, he was a manager of one of the hotels over in Coffee Creek area, and he said that three people ran in front of him and then went up this hill, and he was all pissed off because it was very smoky. He thought it was just a family of three people that ran in front of him because he really couldn't see him very well. But as he looked up the hill, they were already all the way up the hill, and as he really thought about it, he was like, those weren't three people, that ran in front of me, and because they're 100 yards up this really steep incline by now, and as I look up there. So, yeah, I imagine they're displacing them if they're around, but, nothing recent that we've heard of, no.
Not to change the subject, but I wanted to bring up tools. So all the tools that technology of today, they're being used to search for Sasquatch, and the cameras, you get some interesting pictures, but maybe they're not quite what we think they are. But let's talk about the therm real quick, and I'll go back to an investigation I had where Bart, same guy we're talking about, This is his second therm sighting, right? Mm-hmm. First time the earlier therms did not have the capability of recording. You needed to have a video camera and transfer what it sees on that therm to the video camera that records it. And that's how you're getting your records. So Bart had to go take a leak, and he saw some movement, so he's curious. So he goes back and gets a therm that's not connected to recording ability.
Yeah.
He films, and he sees his first squatch. So he says he went from believing to knowing at that moment as he watches this. At first he thought it was maybe one of the other people in camp using the bathroom in the bushes, but all the behavior. So by the time he gets Cliff to bring it and hook it up, it's gone. You know, sure you saw it. Only one who saw it, one person.
Yeah.
Like they get for a bird confirmation, two people see it. You check the block, one person, sorry, can't help you. So let's go to another, I'm going to say two years later. And now he's over in the Sierras. And are you familiar with hearing about the kill site in the Sierras?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's the Sierra kill site. It's north of Truckee area, anyhow. So in the same general area, he's out there, and they're doing a reenactment or trying to figure out about how the kill site went down, right? So the guy who allegedly shot is there.
Oh, is this the Justin Bartha?
No. Schmeha.
Okay, yeah.
Schmeha.
I'm thinking of another guy. Yeah. Not Bartha. Bartha's an actor.
His cousin.
That guy.
Yeah, his cousin.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw his interview.
What is it? They killed one?
Yeah, this hunter. This guy's like a expert hunter, hunts deer and elk. And he's got a long, crazy story about how he put a couple of them down.
Yeah. Shot a large one, disappeared in the trees, hearing a crash in a brush. The smaller one came out several times, ends up shooting it. Asked what the difference between shooting and killing. He basically shot the big one but killed the little one in terms of philosophy. Didn't need to be done, but why do you do it? Anyhow, whether you believe it or not, okay, that happened in 2010. So 2011 comes by, and by 2012, Bart has a thermal sighting. This time he's ready. So he has a nice therm. Every night he travels with it and he uses it. He sits in the camp and shoots out. While people are in the camp making noise, he goes out and he walks around and he records. He's had some great luck with the therm. When we go out, I'm a night vision guy. He's a therm, and I let him know that's a rock he's looking at, and he lets me know that that thing that's glowing green, you know, is actually algae or something come off the trees.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so he gets this thermal sighting. Right? He basically films it through a gap in the trees, and there are the guy I talked about in the Shmeha's in a hammock sleeping by the fire ring. You have two other individuals around camp. You have a third that's sleeping in his car, and you have Bart and Ro, Sean walking up this road, and then Bart shooting down to check on camp. And lo and behold, he sees these figures glowing with heat signatures. So he films, and then he runs out of batteries. Goes back down to the camp, tells the guys, oh, yeah, we heard it. There's something up there. Yeah, we heard it. We saw shadows moving. Meantime, he's still looking. He can't see anything, right? Gets new batteries, goes back up. Same guy, same place. They're still here. So he films them. And he films what looks like one stepping between gaps and trees. I'm pretty sure it wasn't a portal, but, you know.
Yeah. And We don't know yet.
Yeah. He's steps between gaps and trees. And then you have something that's sitting stationary that doesn't move, but it's glowing. And then you have something getting dropped from a tree. And then you have a glowing object shoot across. So there's like four things going on, right? So we get the footage. Roddy and I call him over it. We spend 3.5 hours debunking it, right? That's the fire ring. See, it doesn't move. It's a human to be moving. That's the fire ring. That's the guy getting firewood, or that's that. Oh, that's a bird that came by and landed. Oh, that was probably a flying squirrel. They have flying squirrels gliding across the sky, right?
Yeah.
We had it figured out. So, and I wrote like a 9-page what I think at the moment. And then Bart goes, well, come on up and investigate it. So I wrote a 20-page after that, but on the investigation. But we went up there and we tried to duplicate all the actions. Because it's like a lot of people will see something and they're not there. So they don't know all the details. And we jump to conclusions because we always know more than the next guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we jump to conclusions on it. And I did the same thing. We did the same thing. It was part of the breaking down process to build back up again. So I went out there. I spent 8 days up there, basically going over and dropping rocks, warming up things under armpits, mm-hmm. and then seeing if you can see them in the therm. I went all over looking for objects that can be picked up and tossed that show up like you want them on the therm. And the best thing were rocks. There was a few of those. Crushed beer cans don't fly as well. Plastic ones don't. Regular beer cans. There's a bunch of free-range cows. We thought maybe throwing some cow poop, see if it flies through the air if it's hot. Yeah. We didn't do that, by the way. The dry ones, Frisbee. Yeah. I'm not touching the smoking stuff. So we come down to rocks, so we duplicated everything there. And we figured out that whoever had dropped that rock mm-hmm. Had to be about 9 feet tall mm-hmm. to drop that rock because it came from a higher place. So we had Kip, 6'3", about that wide. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, Kip, I'll be nice to you. You're like that. Yeah, but like that. Yeah. So, and we couldn't get the hive to fit, so we had to put them on top of logs to get them way up there, just to duplicate that. We threw objects and tried to get them to balance off trees to see what worked best. A rock worked best. We even put Kip in the gap between trees and had him walk and to check height and girth. We even found out that looking through this gap from his position, it goes through some scattered trees, it gets to the bottom, and the meadow kind of goes flat, and then it starts going downhill. Well, we had another glowing object that walked like a human move between this gap, and it was higher up on this gap, which meant it was farther away. So we had 3 to 4 individuals around this campsite moving around, and then you had Bart's car with the cameras shooting into the forest. Well, whatever it was moving around walked between his vehicle and the people at the firing.
Oh, really?
So we pieced this all together with research, breaking it down, duplicating it. And when I was done, the therm quality wasn't the best. Yeah, plus Bart doesn't know what a tripod is, so it's always like this. So anyhow, it wasn't like Bartow says it wasn't damning footage, which means you can't look at that and go, oh, yeah, that's a Squatch. Mm-hmm. But it was something that was large, and there were several of them, and they're around this campsite. So now you can speculate. So this is in 2012. What happened in 2010 was the Shmehesh killings, if indeed they did happen, right? Mm-hmm. And Shmehesh is sleeping on this cot by this fire, and we have these things moving around this campsite. And you know, they're carrying rocks because we saw them fly and get dropped. And then you have one that doesn't move. It's stationary. And what is it doing? Is it watching Bart and Sean film? Mm-hmm. And the other ones are really agitated. They're moving quickly and they're not staying in one place. While one of them is stationary, it doesn't move anywhere. And then you have one going back around, because when you look through a gap, you know how many are on this side and how many are on this side, because you'll see them pass. Mm-hmm. That's how we figured out there were 3 to 4 of them around camp.
Yeah. And so, again, it doesn't, you know, it's not proving anything.
Yeah.
It's just telling you what it's not.
But it's proving it's proving to yourself that you want to keep researching these things.
Yeah.
You want to keep looking.
But that's what it takes, is that kind of follow-up on experiences for people to go out and, you know, see what the height was, how far away it was, you know, put people into those situations where, you know, they can look at them and compare. So and going back to these sightings and stuff like that, that's what people are, maybe they're afraid to go back or whatever, but that's what needs to happen more often. Maybe one of them left some hair or, you know, a little bit of skin or something like that, because that's the next thing is the DNA. You know, they're going to have to get some DNA off a dead body to have something to compare it to. They've been trying to do the DNA studies, but nothing's come back.
They don't got it yet.
Yeah, this thing called environmental DNA, which is like everything that plays with water, poops in it, pees in it, eats over it, so we slough off cells. So part of that is collecting water samples and seeing what made contact with the water. And so that's kind of, to me, it's like magic. You know, but that's one of the things they're trying to do, to figure out what animal species frequent an area. There's a friend of ours also in Washington State who stumbled upon a nest. Yeah. What is a nest? Well, just like street structures, you know, caroms lined up. So you get a place where vegetation has been woven together or stacked or piled up and crushed, and you find these different locations. So the one they found in Washington on private areas where people don't access it, on a group of them on ridges near water, yeah, without any bird poop in them, without any animal fecal matter, which makes it ask some questions of what were those for. They found large human-like footprints around the brush that was broken by hand versus cut and wedged into these nests. So people give them a hard time. They say, oh, yeah, it was like a big eagle nest, right? And they're going, well, there's no feathers. Or like wood rats will pile sticks, but they also urinate all over them because it helps preserve the wood. You probably didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the nests stay around a lot longer.
If you pee on wood, it preserves the wood?
Well, wood rats can do it because of the chemicals.
Oh, don't just go pee, I don't know, on about your antiques around your house.
Well, I don't know.
I really like this credenza. I better piss all over.
That's why that corner of the back porch, you know, it looks great.
Yeah, as a matter of fact.
You got to get wood rats to do the right job.
Yeah, one of my friends, Ranger Guys, he has three daughters so in one bathroom. You know how that goes. So he did a lot of pissing off the balcony.
That's the best.
He had to replace that place. So it doesn't work for humans very well.
Okay. Yeah.
Guys, this is fascinating stuff. If we weren't up against... No, I meant that sincerely. I do like piss stories. We are up against it time-wise. We got a show to do here in a little bit. But before we leave, Fox Meat, you being a Humboldt guy, anything maybe outside the realm of Sasquatch?
The listener should know that Dr. Fox Meat has presented himself in a large cornucopia wizard hat. He is wearing robes. He is an internet wizard.
Yeah.
What other titles do you hold?
Well, I mean, Dr. Fox Meat, it's an honorary doctorate, as I said before, Phoenix University. I do some freelance stuff out of my windowless van. If you guys want to catch me around town, and I'll just wave me down, I'll check it out, you know. But I do a lot of wizardry on Twitch, twitch.com/Dr. Fox Meat.
All right.
Check me out there.
Can you, is wizardry bestowed, or how is it delivered?
To me, you can learn it, you're born with it. I think that usually what it is with wizardry is you find it and you realize that that's something that's, you know, Harry Potter didn't know he was a wizard when he was born, but you know.
Yeah.
And I find that it's somewhat mundane. A lot of people are like, you know, cast a spell, let's do some magic. Usually it comes down to more like a... discussions on new Taco Bell items, stuff like that.
Oh, shit. I've been a wizard for a while, though.
Yeah. Kyle, I was going to say...
we've been wizards for a minute.
Yeah, you guys are both in danger of becoming wizards. You know, just a couple more inches on the beard.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Is there any wizardry send-off you can give us to round out the podcast here?
You know, live long and prosper. May the force be with you. I don't know.
It's good. It's good advice.
Yeah.
Right on. Dr. Fox Meat, thank you so much. Where can we find you online, Dr. Fox?
As I was saying before, at @DOCTORFOXMEAT on, you know, Instagram, Twitter, all that stuff. And then same at twitch.com. I do Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturday nights on Twitch. Come and we'll talk about... We'll start talking about magic and mystery and eventually end up talking about the Crunchwrap Supreme. It's this just is, the way it goes.
This is Boogie Monster Wheelhouse, like nobody's business.
You know,
Rowdy and Rob, what projects can we promote for you on the podcast right now? I do have the Bluff Creek Project.
Yeah, it's all Bluff Creek Project. We got Facebook. We got a blog spot. We got a podcast. Yeah, you can. It'll all pop up when
under
you,
Bluff Creek Project.
Bluff Creek Project. Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, guys, thank you so much for your time.
Sure.
Thank you for your expertise. This is fascinating to have something just a notch above barstool hearsay. To have some people who
somebody who knows what they're talking about
actually been out there, done the legwork. So we certainly appreciate your time, and these stories are fascinating.
Yeah. Thanks for having us, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Guys.
Give it up for our guests, ladies and gentlemen.
Boogie Monster Live. I'm Dave Stone. This is Kyle Kinane. Thanks for coming out.
Well, yeah. Have a good night, everybody. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys. All right.
The Boogie Monster.
Podcast Network.